Bring a Trailer podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bring a Trailer podcast. Alex here, still a staffer at Bring a Trailer, at least for now, joined by Zach, also still a staffer for now. How are you, Zach?
I'm good. I can tell you've been doing a lot of these based on the way your intros have improved.
Oh, is it better?
You got it dialed, dude.
Okay, great. I tried to dial up the enthusiasm. Did you see me do the little build before I did it?
You're halfway to becoming a robotic radio host.
That's what a compliment.
We need some DJ horn.
Well, let's make it real. Let's pivot to what we were doing just downstairs in the office right now. Before we dive into the embarrassment that we can both share, how many cars in your fleet are fully functional right now?
Define fully functional.
Well, I know at least one is not. Like, you could jump in them and take them on a road trip.
Okay, they all have the potential to be fully functional with an easy jump of the battery. But yeah, no worse guilty feeling of realizing how much you've neglected your fun car by going to grab the keys, starting it, and nothing, huh?
Yes, that's right. We both have a dead Porsche GT3 downstairs, which is like not like that, like almost the fact that there's two of them.
There's our title for this episode, Height of First World Problems.
Totally. Totally. Stash them both at Bring a Trailer headquarters.
Both our GT3s are dead.
I know. We'll cry ourselves to sleep later.
Yeah, behind the wheel of our loaner Macans.
Totally. If you want to own a Porsche GT3, you better enjoy driving Macans because you'll be in the loaner Macan a lot.
Yeah, so battery issue there. Dead battery in the NSX also, but I think that one's actually back and running.
I went with you to go pick up that car today, which was very exciting, and I was able to schedule an appointment to get my car worked on too. Hopefully that one will start. Fingers crossed. Let's assume it will. And that keeps me at 4 out of 6 of my cars being functional, which is not bad. That's over 50%.
Is the cord functional?
No, it's a hovercraft cord right now. It should be functional, but I went to see it at my dad's house, and he can't leave a good thing well enough alone. And so he took the wheels off to have them powder coated. So it's sitting on jack stands. I did start it.
Okay.
And it ran on jack stands.
Yes. Self-induced.
Well, induced by my father. So his fault. And then obviously my yellow Porsche is not working, but the other four are working, I think.
But I do hate that feeling because the car you spend the most amount of time in is usually not your favorite car that you own, right? It's like whatever's in the driveway or what you're commuting in. And then you go to grab the car you actually want to be driving, and it's dead because it's been 5 weeks and you've neglected it the entire time.
And that's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, you feel like a bad person.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think about this a lot as I'm driving around in my 2019 Civic Si, because a lot of times I'm thinking this is my favorite car that I own, which also makes me feel like a bad person. It's like, what are you doing with all these other cars?
But I have some of that too, where like people ask me, oh, what do you like better between these two or this or that? And it's always relative to what I'm driving, which is points to me being privileged and having a fleet of great cars. But yeah, it's like, it's tough to say. And sometimes it is something just like the Civic that's easy to motor around in, easy to park, low stress.
I did, and I know you like this car, my old green 912V. I fired that bad boy up recently for the first time in a long time. I drove down here to the office last week and I was driving that around and I was like, oh, I'm a total loser. I've moved on to cars with air conditioning and, you know, like even my quote unquote vintage cars have cruise control and are comfortable. I'm like, this is a real vintage car. And I was like, man, is this fun to drive?
It's funny that you say that, one, because I was just thinking about your green car because it always irritated me how confident driving that car makes you feel compared to that blue early 911 I had, and really clicked at how much I didn't care for driving that blue car when I was driving yours around. Also because like I've still been going to the track a lot and I've been driving too many modern cars, where I got in the NSX the other day and it suddenly really felt its age all of a sudden in a way it never had. And I was like, oh, I got to stop driving new cars.
Totally. There's like
diluting my sensations.
There's an achievement that it, you know, when you soldier through something that's a little more difficult to drive or even to get started or to make it do exactly what you want it to do, that's highly satisfying.
Yeah. I know. And that's actually been my frustrating thing on track lately, because I've been like, I took the Ferrari out there.
Are you too fast, Zach? Are you getting too fast?
Yeah, that's actually the opposite of my problem. It's crazy just when you're in a 20-year-old car, even though it has 400 horsepower, just how much technology is advanced and how fast everything is out there.
I presume like front wheel drive cars and stuff are so fast. That's one of the things with my Civic. It's like it's most certainly a more capable car than the NSX. Like,
yeah, absolutely. All the new Civics and Integras, Type S's and R's, they also have a lot of tire on them too. Mm-hmm. So they have just a ton of grip and those are fast. The new Supras are super fast. Every new BMW, this or that, tune this or that. But there's also just like McLaren this, Ferrari that, Huracan STO there.
It's amazing what they sell people.
Yeah, AMG GT race car. And
do those BMWs feel huge on the track when you're in a car like your 360 Ferrari? They look so big to me. They're almost truck-like when I see them.
The only thing that felt really huge on the track was I was out there with a Cybertruck. This is now.
There was like a Cybertruck on the track?
There's a photo. I'm sure a bunch of people have seen it on Instagram by now of a Cybertruck going down the corkscrew. But Yeah, I've been out with him like a couple times now.
Wow.
And they're
fast, aren't they?
They are fast. I don't think he was in my run group, but he's not in like the bottom run group. So he's got to be carrying some pace in that thing.
It's a lot of mass.
To me, it just looks like the country's being invaded. It's just like scary seeing that thing in your mirror, like your heart kind of skips a beat.
Urban assault vehicle. I actually worry sometimes that blue 911 made it so you're never going to buy another vintage car again. Be level with me. Be truthful. Will you ever get another truly vintage car again, do you think?
It's so funny that you say that. One, because I feel lame and insecure that like I just drive boring modern cars. But two, being at our event, especially, man, this time of year, spring suddenly hits.
This is the San Diego event from a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, being at the event and the weather, I was like, man, I gotta get another like properly old car.
Windows down, right? Hanging your arm out the window.
The thing, because I'm enough of a paranoiac that I just like don't like the idea of being squished by a truck. Mm-hmm. So commuting around here and where people are kind of aggressive, it's not my favorite. But yeah, just being down there, it sent me down a huge rabbit hole. I've been looking, not that I'd pull trigger on one, but I was going deep on 66 GT350s.
Oh man. Great. I mean,
that would just be so strong. And there's a ton of events like you can do stuff with it. So totally. That's what I'm a little hung up on. My buddy's been texting me about step noses a lot lately,
mm-hmm, which was always a favorite of yours. E9s always used to call your name too.
Yeah. E9s until I drove one. Maybe I'm a little young for this, but
that's a more substantial car, at least if that's what you're looking for. A step nose is a pretty small, lightweight car.
Yeah. I think the chassis rigidity of the E9 was maybe not my favorite, but you know, if you're a senior partner at a law firm and it's Friday and you're cruising up to your 13-hour workday, that's a nice car to come
totally.
And go in.
Totally.
But yeah, no, it is sweet. Could be good. But yeah, Mustangs.
Remember how fast and great all those Mustangs were on the Copper State? It was such a great car.
I've been thinking about Fallen Comer and his white one, mm-hmm, a lot. I'm so dumb. I should have taken the chance to ride in that thing while we're out there. It would have been such a cool compare and contrast to the Falcon.
Totally.
And see how they really handle differently. Or not.
Or not.
Yep. So yeah, I've been going deep on those.
What about later Mustangs? Those do anything for you, like 67, 68s, or even Boss 302 era?
I love them. I just think I like the proportions of the early cars. Like they feel kind of European.
Totally.
And it's just a little more my speed, I think. Yep. But at the same time, I think you get a collapsible steering column around 67 or 68 instead of that just spear pointed at your chest. Uh-huh. So I know you're into those.
I like all of them. I mean, like you, there's no denying that the 65, 66 is it's like, you know, for people like us who love European sports cars, it's the kind of the closest.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not really a muscle car, but, you know, pony car, closest American equivalent in many ways to a European car. And that's why I like the Falcon so much, too, which is, you know, a Mustang underneath. But yeah, the more I've thought about those cars, and I've been fantasizing about them for a long time, as you know, the more that there's kind of mission creep, right? Then all of a sudden the 67, 68s look pretty good. And then now I'm kind of like, oh, I like the 69-70 too. So,
man, the interior of the 67, I think 68 is when they go to the wood dash.
Yes,
the fake wood
with
dash.
That little two-spoke steering wheel. Even that stuff is charming.
It's still cool, but I love the gauges and just the 70 dash of the 67. So I'm still obsessive about 74 Carreras, mm-hmm, but there's just so few. Yeah, great result on a 75 today.
You, many years ago, told me that you would love to have an impact bumper Carrera, but with a European MFI 2.7 in it. And I've thought about that a lot. It's one of the many opinions I've stolen from you.
Yeah, I think it would be sweet. Just knowing me and what I like to do with cars, and it's the same thing with the GT350, where I'd rather get a US Carrera or a not authentic GT350 and then sort of modify it into totally. Little bits and pieces I like. Because I feel if you get an MFI car, then you never want to touch it. You want to keep it completely original, which has its appeal, but for what I like to do with them, the same motor I had in my blue 72, I'd love to just put in a 74.
Yes. Yes, I think that would be excellent. And great colors in those cars, which for me matters a lot in the impact bumper career as they started getting a little more, yeah, a little more lively.
I know this ice green metallic one we sold maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think about constantly.
Mm.
But yeah, we'll see. So long-winded answer to your question of
is yes, maybe. I would you're entertaining the thought.
Yeah, it's at the forefront of my mind.
But you wouldn't go older than that probably?
I don't know if I'd get a 50s car at this point in my life.
Is it the drum brakes? Is it the like the fact that they're for the most part a little bit less sporty? What is the thing that makes you hesitate?
I couldn't hone in on one thing, and that's a good question. And again, you're really honing in on your interview.
I mean, what about a 356?
That is interesting because I have been kind of thinking about 356s, and I think I'm an A only guy.
All right, so then you've got a 50s car.
Yeah, so I guess that would break the trend there. In general, 50s, before we come back to 356, I just can't imagine grabbing the keys to that over something else.
Yeah.
And the events I'd like to participate in a car like that on, just 60s or early 70s car is so much more capable on the back roads for the most part.
What about a Jag? You ever think about Jags, 140s, 150s?
Sometimes we get some. I love 120s.
Yeah.
They're just like so simple looking and pure, mm-hmm, and just cool. But from what I've heard about driving them, I think it's probably just not the experience.
Yes, it's an old feeling car. But a 150 has disc brakes. That's what made me think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All that stuff. Maybe in my later years, I'd love to have just an open top old car to motor around town. Like even like a TR3 with those little doors and just feeling that connected.
TR3s are sick. So, same with Sprites. They're like, it's like a toy, but it's a really, yeah, fun toy.
Well, and speaking of which, that S600 we just sold. I mean, that's like, as good,
I know,
as
that's
I
the ultimate
60s car, but
I'm afraid I've missed the boat on those too for a long time. Last week, Randy and I were on a podcast talking about how like, oh yeah, they're like pretty affordable. I think 104K one sold for today.
That Toyota Sport 800, which doesn't get anywhere near a cool drivetrain, but those
harder. Like how many of those have we? Those almost never come across the.
I think they only made. I think they made fewer than 1,000 of them.
Also, speaking of your fears of being crushed to death, I mean, that's like a 1,400-pound yeah, car.
And at least the S600 kind of has the power to get out of the situation. No. But it's like a low-revving two-cylinder in the Sport 800.
Yes. And it's made out of tinfoil. I believe quite literally made out of tinfoil.
Every once in a while, we get a modified early E-Type that kind of appeals to me. I like when people do the kind of lightweight conversions. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Young guy in an E-Type, it's just not the vibe.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Has that ever been done? Yeah, maybe in period.
I'm not a trendsetter. I'm a follower. But yeah, 356 is a good call. Man, finding a good and the right A, what would be your spec?
I mean, you're speaking about results, and I was just looking before we did the pod. I was looking at interesting results recently, and 911R, one of our power sellers, sold a 356 European model, which is kind of a weird, they're 55s, I want to say. There was the Continental, which was, you know, kind of an early U.S. import model of the 356. I believe they're still bent windshield. And Ford got upset. I believe this is the story about Porsche using the Continental name. And so for a few months, they changed it to the 356 European. I might be the only one we've ever listed. Did really well. Had some modifications on it, but that was light blue. And I think it had a little slightly breathed upon 1.6 in it. I mean, that would be an amazing car for me. Maybe even a little bit more than breathed upon, maybe a Will Hoyt, like 1.8 or 2 liter motor and a 356. And then you can put like a 901 trans in them, but maybe they take the fifth gear off. I can't remember exactly what it is, but you get a little bit of a taller final drive.
Yeah. We were just talking about this. I think it's Wevo basically engineered the solution because, and this is all me doing my best to give the explanation justice, but to otherwise fit a new transmission, you have to modify the trans tunnel. Like people do it with speedsters, and that's why a lot of Will Hoyt engines still have a 4-speed. But Wevo developed, I think, just new internals for the original 4-speed to basically convert it to a 901.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe they use 901 gears or something.
Yes. You don't have to modify the trans tunnel.
In the old days, like when I drove Volkswagens, it was called a freeway flyer. That was like a way, it had a taller fourth gear. But one of the problems with that was third gear was the same. So there was a big gap between, you had to wind the snot out of third gear and then you'd shift into fourth and the motor would bog down. But then at least you had a tall final drive. I think now I'm stepping outside of my depth a little bit. I think in 912s, the 4-speed and 5-speed have the same final drive for the highest gear. So like the five speed just has closer ratios because it has one more gear. But maybe that's why so many people put 912 motors in those and gearboxes, presumably.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the optimum for me. I've come around on drum brakes too. And one of the old hot rod modifications for the drum brake 356s all the way up through Bs, 356Bs, was to put the big Carrera drums on the front, 356 Carrera drums, which are like twice as thick, which look pretty cool. Hard to find a set. So you can, I like the idea of kind of transitional technology. So, you know, doing the best you can with drum brakes and kind of period speed parts.
Upgrades is just totally a cool way to do it.
And people drove those cars hard and fast in the early 60s.
Man, people drive them hard and fast right now today on the mother load.
Correct. I've had a hard time keeping up with people at 356s, and I'm in a much slower car or a much faster car in theory, and that is embarrassing.
The other problem, if either of us get a 356, especially an A, they're just so on Randy's radar that
I know
it would be a hard ownership experience.
Right. And he has such good taste. You would be constantly, nitpicked apart by the things you did wrong.
I know. I just have to basically give him my Visa and say, go make this better.
Totally.
Beehive or Teardrop, or are you agnostic?
Honestly, the last time I seriously fantasized about a 356 build was many years ago. We had maybe 5-6 years ago. We had More Imports auctioned a very early 356 BT5. So it was like a 1960. I want to say it was like the 100th 356B ever. And it was kind of rough, but not too rusty. Didn't run California black plates. It was like a beat up blue paint chipping off it. Would have been kind of a patina build kind of thing, which are a little cliche, but that car with a Will Hoyt motor and some Speedster bucket seats and lowered big Carrera drums up front, nice looking wide fives, good stance, and some kind of a gearbox so you can get some highway speeds out of it. I've thought about that a lot.
I'm team Will Hoyt motor if you could swing it or if one's laying around already in the car.
Yeah. Maybe pull the motor out of my green car and put it in there. We've seen 356s with fat motors in them.
Early Emery cars.
In fact, I think that's where I heard about the fat motor. I think that's how I first found out about it, was that they were in Emery cars.
And now I think we've had this exact conversation on the podcast before.
Probably. That's going to happen again and again. What about you? What's the ultimate 356 dream for you?
I'm like obsessive around taillights, so it's going to be a Beehive.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be early bent window or anything like that.
Coupe though, right? Not a Speedster?
Yeah, yeah. Driver, a coupe.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's the best way to go.
Yeah, we'll see. So you did bring it out of me that I guess there's at least one 50s car I would go.
And you can put disc brakes on those. You can do all kinds of stuff to those cars.
Yeah. Someday. We'll see. But old cars are on my radar.
I guess one of the things I said, a truly vintage car, I mean, you know, your Ferrari or my NSX, those cars are not actually that new, right? They're getting kind of vintagey. Well, what about stuff that's in between, like 80s cars or 70s cars?
This is like the great quandary of if you went to high school in 1986 and your buddy was rolling a 65 Mustang, you'd probably go, that's like a vintage car in 86, right?
Yes, it would have felt that way for sure.
But now, today, if Felix's classmate, when he's 16, junior high school, is rolling an E46 325i, you're not like, that's a vintage car, right?
Totally. Totally. Like, I drove that Carmen Ghia to high school, and that would probably feel, that probably felt about as vintage in 1999 as it would today. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right? So there is something like so set in time. And I feel like with the progress of like materials and fiberglass and all of this, it definitely like shifts the definition of what is vintage. But I think about that a lot where it's like, yeah, the NSX is, that Ferrari is 25 years old.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect midlife crisis mobile.
Totally. Totally. It is. It really is. The thing that made me think of that is one of the cars we were going to talk about is a 911 turbo slant nose that sold today at 87 or 88, something like that. What, like, where does that, you know, that's kind of nebulous. It stands in between those two kind of eras. Like, I don't think a lot of our colleagues or our car buddies would call that a vintage car.
Oh, interesting. But it's so funny.
It's almost 40 years old.
I feel that you see an impact bumper 911, and for like the untrained eye between 74 and 89, they're all kind of the same. Mm-hmm. And people would probably go, that's a vintage car.
Oh, you think so? Okay. Interesting.
But if you saw an E30, like any E30, I personally wouldn't call that a vintage car.
Even though some of them are older than some impact bumper 911s. Yeah. That's so interesting.
I don't know. Maybe I'm off on that.
What, well, you're younger than me. And like, so I remember when an impact bumper 911 was like a pretty contemporary car. Like my uncle came, drove up to our in our driveway when I was probably about 10. So this is early 90s in like an 87 or 88 3.2 Carrera in like a chocolate brown color. And that felt like a new Porsche to me. So I remember when impact bumper cars felt pretty new.
Funny.
Yeah. I also remember them being kind of cheap, which they're not anymore. So like, I don't know. Yeah. That's why they feel nebulous to me in terms of whether they're vintage or not.
Yeah, I see it for sure. There's so much just technology that like goes back to an era that feels so different than cars being made in the 80s that makes me go,
They have synchro mesh transmissions. They have fuel injection. They're not like hard to start.
Yeah, you know hydraulic what I mean? Clutch on the newer ones. I don't know. They still smell like gas in a way that most cars sure do. From the 80s don't.
Yeah. You could definitely get crushed to death in one of those, Zach.
But yeah. Impact bumper. Come on, Alex.
It's in the name. Sorry. That fixed everything.
Back to your original question of M505 slant nose.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very pro and I know a lot of people aren't. And I was looking at this. The reason I wanted to bring it up is I was looking at this car again today. I was like, yes, I really like it. And I don't dislike, you know, classic bug eye Porsche headlights. I love them. In fact, the one thing I wonder about is, you know, driving my 912 around, the thing I still love is seeing the two headlights stick out in front of you when you're in the driver's seat, and you lose that obviously in a slant nose. But from the outside, man, there's some weirdness about them. I get why people are critical of them, but I love
seeing them have no desire to own over a just normal 930.
Yeah. But what I was going to ask about that 930 in general, your yes. Thumbs
I
up.
Love 930.
Yeah, me too.
It's one of those cars that I feel like a lot of the time in photos, kind of like, even honestly, like a photo of a 930 and a photo of like a nice 89 coupe. A lot of the time I'm like more drawn to the narrow body, just not turbo car. But I feel like you see a 930 in person and you're like, yes. It
Correct.
Just has so much presence.
It really does.
It looks way more exotic in person than, like, it's not quite like seeing a Countach, but it's almost in the way that it hits you when you see one driving around with those flares.
Agreed completely. A couple of months ago, I was driving somewhere and I saw a white turbo Carrera and it was like lowered and it just looked so good. And I actually started following it for a little bit just to look at it. I haven't done that in a long time. And I was just like, God, look at that.
Nice. Then you saw the handgun come out the window.
I mean, I tried not to do it for too long. It was a silver-haired, sporty-looking gentleman. I'm sure he had a Rolex on. I didn't quite catch that. But nice. It was, you're right about the presence in person.
Yeah, I love those. Those, especially early Turbo Carrera, that's on my list of cars I'd love to own. But you totally nailed it. I was just talking with Brandy about this. The view out the hood is so important to me with pretty much any car. Just losing out of those fenders on an M505, I would be disappointed every time I drove it.
I don't know if this is the same for you with the NSX as it is for me, but the most pleasantly surprising thing about owning that car and driving around in it is same. It's the view out the front and the fenders kind of angle down when you look at them from the inside.
Yes.
You don't notice that from the outside of the car.
And you see the sharp angle of them. Uh-huh. I have like a distinct memory of like, because I'd been talking about getting one of those forever. And then you just jumped on one and I just felt so dumb for not being the first one to buy one. And then sitting in yours, we're on a road trip together in it. And like just this intense feeling of I have to have one of these just based on that view out the front. It's so satisfying.
You're the reason I own that car in many ways. Because I don't know if you remember this. My buddy Tony from San Luis Obispo reached out and he's like, my dad knows this guy who's got this. It was a red ivory 91 sitting in his garage under a bunch of newspapers and stuff. And he sent me a picture of it. And I was like, oh, man, I've always liked those cars. And I had to get rid of my S2000. I worked on NSXs a long time ago, and this is before they'd really shot up in value. And I talked to you about it. This was very early days. I don't know if you remember. This was very early days at Bring a Trailer. And you said something like, tell him I'll be there tomorrow with 40 grand or something like that. And I was like, oh, maybe I should try to buy this. And then I couldn't buy that car. And then this silver one, almost like just coincidentally at the same time, like fell into my lap. And it was a kind of an impulse purchase. And here I am, whatever, 7 or 8 years
That's
later with
one.
The car.
Silver's way better. Than red in my book.
Yeah, maybe the red one would have had fewer issues than my silver car, but it's sorted now.
Who knows? Yeah, could have had way more.
Yeah, totally. So a car sitting around is not good, to tie us back to our original discussion here. I've had to replace the battery in that NSX quite a few times from it.
I know. And the battery location is that's like horrible. So really deep reminder of how much you messed up not driving that car.
Yes, that's exactly correct. That's
why my spare just lives in my trunk right now.
Also true. My spare has been sitting on top of the terrible aftermarket wheels that came on that car when I bought it for the last, whatever, 6 years since last time I had to pull the battery
out. Jumpstart mods on that car. I'm just going to have to get my quarter balance realigned now with the weight difference with the tire in the back.
Yeah.
Yep. But another reason why that's such a good road trip car, because you have a spare in it.
It is such a freaking good road trip car. And actually, when we went to go pick yours up today, I heard you say you're going to drive it to Utah, which immediately got my heart pumping, because driving an NSX across the American West is like my dream. I still haven't done it yet.
That's a plan. Maybe if not on this podcast, in a future one, you'll have to help me with my route.
What are you doing? What's the plan?
Overcrest Rally.
Oh, cool. So it's there and you're going to... get to the start and finish with the car. Is that the idea?
The start is in southeastern Utah.
Southeast. Okay.
So
does that mean you have to get across the Continental Divide on the far side of the Rockies?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of a tough location from California where I'm like, obviously I'm going to drive, but even if you were to fly, I think you'd fly into Salt Lake and it's still probably an easy five-plus-hour drive.
But I think Salt Lake's in the western part of the city. Oh, yeah. It
would be a trek from Salt Lake too. So I think I'll do here to maybe Las Vegas will be my middle point, but it's still at least 9 hours from Vegas, the start.
Man.
6 to 9.
You're going to try to do it in 2 days?
I might do an extended stay in Vegas.
I was going to say, those are two pretty brutal days before a driving event.
I know. It's going to be long, but rewarding. Hopefully, I can actually motivate myself to take some decent pics out there. I've never seen Moab. Is that
the route that it's on, or do you not know the route yet?
Really? I don't know the route, but Moab's north of the start.
I mean, they're going to want to drive through some cool places. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm so jealous. That's like dream trip for me. Put a couple thousand miles on the car, too.
Yeah, I think, hopefully.
Awesome.
Yeah, it should make it now that Don's serviced it up.
That's right. Slight plug to do, because my dream had been when I met you and Howard in Vegas a couple years ago and I couldn't get my NSX running in time for it. My plan had been to drive it across Highway 50, the loneliest road in America, which goes from Reno to
Maryland.
It does. But the route I drove is from Reno straight across the northern fat part of Nevada east to Ely, this cool old mining town.
Is Ely a good state? Because that's the other way I could go through.
It was pretty cool. I mean, and once you're in Ely, you're close to 80 again, right? So you can jump on in. There's some larger cities on that. Larger, I mean, like 40, 50,000 people. Ely's only 5,000, 10,000 people. But I stayed at a pretty nice, like, modern chain hotel, and the like bar scene in the old mining quarter is sick. Okay, it's like a restored old.
Maybe I'll do
town.
That at least one way. The other way, it would add some time. But I could drop down in Arizona. Flagstaff isn't too far.
Oh,
and I was like, it would be nice to relive our hang on the Copper State and Prescott.
Yes.
It was just such a charming town.
Prescott is sick. Flagstaff is sick. Even if you're driving on the interstate down there, which is 40, like through Kingman and everything, it's pretty cool down there. Like even the big 4-lane roads are cool. And there's also, you can do chunks of Route 66 out there, which I think you did on your way back from Texas, didn't you?
You and I definitely did on the Copper State.
Absolutely. Some of those weird places, the place with the weird mine. Remember that? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Too. So, yeah, we'll have to get into route planning, I guess.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Tell me.
I'm like ready to spread out a map, man. That's like my favorite stuff.
You want
to
come?
What month is it?
May 17th, I think.
I'm going to the Indy 500, buddy.
Are you?
Yeah, I didn't tell you that. I've been kind of holding it a secret. Here's the reveal of the thing. I know. I'm really excited. I just booked my flights.
Cool. Do tell. What inspired that? And who are you going with?
My buddies from Lake County, who are big circle track guys. They've gone many times. I was supposed to go to the 100th. It's a little confusing because there's the 100th running and then there's the 100th anniversary because they didn't run it during World War II. And I think maybe they stopped a little bit during World War I also. So the 100th anniversary of the starting of it, I think it's either 1911 or 1913 was the first one. So that happened. But then the 100th running wasn't for a few years after that because they hadn't run it 100 times yet. And I was supposed to go to that one with them and missed it. They go all the time. They've always wanted me to go. They have a whole thing. They run a house in Indianapolis. They go to there's all these like ancillary events like all around. There's like the mini 500. There's like a sprint car race where they run 500 laps on around a quarter mile track like the night before and like winged sprint cars. And there's all these parties all over the whole region. So I'm going with the right dudes. They party it up. I'm going to be out there for 3 or 4 days. They're like, don't miss carb day, which is like the final testing day before. Maybe see hit up Jason from the museum, see if we can go to the museum again.
Which kind of carb is that? Pizza and beer, or
it may be a double entendre there. For sure, I think there's going to be heavy drinking involved at all times. That's like that's part of the word.
I mean, it's the carb part of the country for sure.
Totally. When in Indy, do as the locals do, which we did do a couple years ago when we were there. So I'm just excited to go back to Indy too.
Okay,
but you know, it's one of the bucket list events, right? Is to see the 500.
Awesome. Are you paying attention to the season too? Gearing up for it?
Not paying attention at all. Not, are you watching it? Has your Formula One love bled into IndyCar now?
No, I'm still just Formula One obsessive. Okay. I should be more up on IndyCar.
I have, and there's, you know, that's where you end up once you get fired from one of these fancy Formula One teams. I did just start watching, I think, what is the newest season of
Drive to Survive
with my wife, because it's one of the few things she'll watch. And like, I'm so not following it that it's all a surprise to me, even though what I'm watching happened 18 months ago.
Yeah, Drive to Survive does a good job, but when you've watched the entire season, you can just see through so much of the like, illusion of drama that
God, it's such bullshit, dude. The way they frame everything is terrible.
Like season five, there's like so much pressure and drama. It's like Max Verstappen has a 200 point lead out of everyone else on the grid at this point.
Well, what they do, I think it's actually smart for drama building, is they just like don't tell you the full picture for each episode. They focus on one little micro story, and it's like, yeah, what you don't realize is that the person they just focused on like has no chance of earning a point ever, and their team, you know what I mean? So
They do the best job at building the personas and personalities, and they have so many cool behind the scenes looks on how all that functions and how terrifying Lawrence Stroll is.
Yes, I watched an episode on that. He really is. IndyCar has, you know, amazing drivers in it though too, and there's a lot of Formula One crossover, and the cars are like a little bit more. It's a little more of a spec series, but
Indy's actually faster than F1.
They're freaking sick. The cars are really, really cool. And I have actually been to a couple of IndyCar races before, always road courses though. I've never gone to an oval. I was supposed to go with the same crew to the Vegas race where Dan Weldon was killed, and they were at that race. And that was they do kind of exciting stuff in IndyCar. That was like a shootout. Like, it was like some rich guy's like opened an event and was like $10 million purse for the winner. And it was like, as I recall, it was not part of the regular, you know, season. People just came out for like a little like shootout one-off race competition, and somebody died in.
Yikes.
Former 500 winner. But I watched him at Sonoma, which is great. I used to go to kart races back in the day. That doesn't even exist anymore. You know, kart and IndyCar split off.
Yeah, we have that ex-Andretti kart racer line.
Oh, right, that's right. Is that a kart car or an IndyCar?
It's a kart car.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
They were, as I recall, they were twin turbos, and Indies were still normally aspirated. But I saw them at Laguna Seca maybe about 20 years ago. That was really fun. Sebastian Bourdais, remember him? I think he might have driven Formula One too. He definitely won the Le Mans later in one of those Peugeot prototypes with a diesel. Anyway, I'm excited about it, dude.
Cool. I'm excited for you. Yeah. Big news.
I know. Totally. Would love to go to the museum again, which we did a while ago, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. They sold a bunch of cars on BAT and had an amazing collection. So would like to try to get back there too.
Yeah. Give us the download on the pod when you're back.
Absolutely. We'll be back at the same time roughly. So yeah, we both have done a cool car adventure.
We'll see if I just get stuck and have to move to Utah for this.
There's good car stuff there.
Yeah, I think it's good living out there.
Totally.
It's beautiful in the southeastern quadrant, so I don't think I'll have many complaints.
Those big, beautiful skies of the American West. What other car stuff you got coming up, Zach?
I don't know if I talked about this. Probably have more to say when I'm back, but I'm going to Japan in a couple weeks, and I'm doing a K-car rally.
What does that mean?
You know, KEI,
the little 666 cc or whatever they are. Yeah,
I'm doing a 5-day event all through the countryside of Japan. So we'll start north of Tokyo and kind of loop around up north of all these little towns, crash there overnight.
Wow. Is everyone renting, or do people bring the key cars that they own?
I think most of the event, all of way better answers to these questions when I'm back. But I think most of the event is international travelers coming to do it.
Gotcha.
And there's some people local and that live in Japan that may be doing it their own, but it's limited to K cars only. So
fun. Yeah. Do you know what kind you're going to drive?
Yeah. I'm renting an S660 Roadster.
Oh, that's like the new one.
Yeah.
Oh, those are sick. Oh man.
I'm so excited. Yeah. 6-speed Honda, 600. I think it's got a turbo too. So
they look like a little mini third generation NSX.
Yeah. They have a lot of parallels for sure in the design language. And the one I'm getting, hopefully, is also modified by Spoon. You know, Spoon Sports? Yeah, the blue and yellow livery. So
what does that mean? Like 100 horse, something like that?
I think they're like 80 horsepower, but they're little and the roads out there are small too. So yeah, it should be good. There's also an N600 that's modified by Spoon on there. There'll be some Acties. There'll be some Vans. Maybe some Beats.
We'll any see. Of the, what's the Mazda one called with the gullwing doors? AutoZam. AutoZam?
Yeah. I don't know if anyone will show up in on an AutoZam. Unfortunately, there's some great Japanese rental car companies where you can rent a lot of K cars, but I don't think any have an AutoZam. So that's probably the limiting factor, unless someone owns one over there. And I would imagine they also just get really hot.
I bet.
When the weather's a little warm. They have those like DeLorean style kind of quarter small roll down windows. So it may be tough for
the gullwing problem. Yeah. Speaking of first world problems, that's just in a couple of weeks that you're gone?
Yeah.
Wow. What's the weather going to be like?
It'll be beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah. Cherry blossoms are in bloom a little bit early this year, so I may miss that, but it's usually late March through early April. And then spring, just everything's in bloom.
Awesome.
Tons of colors. Good. Wow. Probably mid to high 60s, maybe even to the 70s.
Oh boy, that makes me jealous too. You've got some good stuff coming up. Is that the primary reason for you going, or are you doing some other stuff? You can do some touristy stuff while you're there too.
I will do a little bit of that. That's the main reason why I'm going. Second to that, I have to see if this car I bought exists or not.
Okay, good. Yeah, you're going to verify the existence of that.
Yeah, we'll see. Which means maybe we'll have to edit this out retroactively if it doesn't exist.
You're going
to
knock on the door and they're going to be like, "Who? Excuse me, who are you?" That's exciting. Any bullet train action? Are you going to ride any trains?
Oh, yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, the train's the best.
Awesome.
But, I mean, you can get Tokyo to Kyoto, which is like a 5 or 6 hour drive. It's 2 hours on the train.
Fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah, we'll talk all about it.
Great. Okay. I won't spoil it anymore. Any other stuff coming up or anything else you've done recently that you want to chat about?
Just more track days. I took the Ferrari down to the...
Give me your impression of that. Nice. I talked to Randy about it a little bit, and he said it was a fantastic event. That is the Encinitas BAT. It's not called a gathering because it was a lot more informal. What do we call it? Meetup? I think that's right. Pretty good turnout. I love it down there, obviously. I was joking with Randy about Fightertown USA. I love freaking San Diego.
I know. Just being in Southern California, Randy and I drove the one from LA. Beautiful day. Just sights, smells, sounds, and colors. You don't quite get anywhere else other than Southern California. That LA lighting, that very distinct heat.
Totally. It's the promised land, man. That's why everyone came out here, right?
Yeah, but the event was killer. The turnout was wild. Great cars. The photo gallery is already up on our supplementary post. There's a 2002 Turbo that was sweet to see.
Cool.
There was an R5 Turbo that was very nice. Had the wild, I think it's the early Series 1 car interior.
Oh, yeah. Randy was talking about that. I've never seen one of those in person. I love that first gen interior.
Yeah, good colors. There was this really modified short wheelbase. They said it was an S, which was pretty wild to modify to this extent. But it, 67S short wheelbase, very modified. And I don't remember what the case was. It was a 3 liter or 3.2 maybe, but they had a GT3 crankshaft in it. There was like some crazy modern Porsche parts in it that was like, I mean, a short wheelbase car, it's in my opinion.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it ripped and sounded.
Did it have flares on it or was it still
narrow? I think it was flared.
That's,
but you need more tire with that.
You totally do. Man, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable with a modest amount of horsepower in a car like that. I mean, riding around in Robbie's, have you ridden around in his 67S?
Because it's got to.
Stock 160 horsepower. It's fast. I mean, yeah. It's fast with that much.
I mean, that
horsepower.
2 liter just sounds so sweet.
Oh, God, it sounds great. It's hard to beat that. Man, I'm jealous that you guys were down there. That's awesome. Did you get a chance to chat people up or was it super cash? Like how did that work?
It was a combination. We didn't have a booth. So a lot of people were like, where is someone from BAT to talk to? So a lot of that, a lot of familiar faces and old friends just get to catch up here and there. Yeah, but on the casual side, I loved it. I think vibes are great. People are just stoked to have a gathering to come to. And
totally.
Bread was good.
Coffee Man, that's awesome. Did you do anything else fun while you were down there?
It's a pretty quick trip for me. So, I mean, the road trip itself is nice. You know, I like driving I-5.
Love that. Love that route. We've done it a couple times together.
Yeah, good action on the 5. It's so green this time of year.
Oh, my gosh. California is so beautiful right now. I went a couple of weeks ago to the Mullen Museum in Camarillo. And like when the California hills are bright green like that, it's hard to want to live anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Randy and Spike Ferris ended a podcast. I got to check out Zuckerman's garage.
Oh, sick.
Plenty of cool stuff. Yeah,
I'm sure there's a few cool cars there.
Yeah, 73 Carrera RS, probably the highlight for me.
Fantastic. We had a good Carrera RS on the website the other day that I was thinking about.
The white one?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. That's on my watch list.
I know. Yeah, it was a good one. All right, dude, we covered a lot of ground.
But, well, even if the answer is no, I got to ask you got anything car related coming up?
Luft next month, the air water thing. That's why I actually need to get that yellow car running, because I'm going to go and I'm going to take my wife, which will be interesting. I don't think she's ever gone to a car event with me one-on-one. So that'll be interesting. I think that's probably a good one for her to dip her toe into the water. They're pretty, pretty mellow and kind of geared towards people kind of enjoying themselves. It's not like, you know, out in a parking lot with people sitting in folding chairs with their beer koozies, you know,
cars, there's more to offer there.
So
in the day in LA.
Yeah. Fingers crossed on that. And we're going to actually stay down there for a couple days and escape our kids, which will be good. Make a little trip out of it. That's how I was able to entice her a few days in LA.
If you can, and have the time, I can't recommend enough how good the Porsche Experience Center is.
Oh, okay.
I came in with pretty low expectations, and what I didn't expect is they have all these different car control things you can do. So you show up there, you book whatever car you want to drive, and they're like, oh yeah, we can take it on the track. We should do the launch thing. There's an autocross. And I'm like, forget all of that. Let's only do the sliding stuff.
And they let you do kind of as you please?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they let you do whatever you want. They're like, well, you really should do the track. You're like, all right, we'll do a few laps, but all I want to do is the low friction surface, sliding the cars around.
What car did you drive on that?
I did a GT3 versus GT4.
So interesting.
You got an hour in each, and it is kind of free to play.
Is the Cayman harder to drift smoothly?
Yeah, I was shocked at how much easier the 911 is to slide around and how much easier it was to catch it on the kick plate. Mm-hmm. You drive over the water, and it kicks it left or right. And it, I mean, the 911 was just better in all respects. It sounds way better. It's easier to drive.
And that's in Orange County, is that right?
It's in LA. It's right off the 405.
Okay. I'll maybe see if I can book it. Getting my wife Torrance to do two different things, but maybe I can leave. We got a cool hotel.
They have like a nice cafe and restaurant.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good. Maybe I can convince her of it.
Sit tight, send some emails for 2 hours.
I actually think there's a distinct possibility that I may end up going to the event myself and she may say, this hotel's nice. I think I'll stay here.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Bad move.
Cool. It'll be fun. And it's, again, an excuse to fire up that yellow car, drive down to Southern California, enjoy our beautiful state, and hang out in LA, which I agree with you on the vibes. It's the best place.
Okay, cool. Well, timing will align nicely because I think Luft is the day I land back from my trip.
So oh, perfect.
We'll do a download on both experiences.
Awesome.
And then get the Indy 500 pod in the works.
Lots of downloads coming up.
Oh, yes.
Lots of exciting stuff. Awesome, Zach. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate your time. For those of you who are listening, please never hesitate to reach out to podcast@bringatrailer.com with feedback, with comments, criticisms. We want to hear it all. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.